Andy, can you hear me?
Yep.
Great. Andy Bitter with Roanoke Times joins me today to preview the Oklahoma State and Virginia Tech matchup in the Camping World Bowl. Oh, it's not the Camping World Bowl, is it? No, yeah, it is. That's right. It's Camping World now. It's not the whatever sports bowl that it used to be. Oh, Andy, thanks for joining me today.
No problem.
So, Andy, how long have you been covering Virginia Tech?
About 6 years. I came in the middle of the 2011 season, so over 6 years now.
Okay. Obviously, not super familiar with Virginia Tech. Not a lot of history between Oklahoma State and VTU. So kind of tell me a little bit about the program now in its second season under Fuente.
Well, it's sort of had a rejuvenation, I'd say. I mean, it didn't completely fall off the map at the end of the Frank Beamer era, but it struggled for a while there. Essentially, since I got on the beat, they went to the 2011 season, they went to the Sugar Bowl. I think they finished top 15 that year. After that, the 4 years after that, it was a real struggle. A team that was struggling to get to bowl eligibility. They made it every single year, but you could kind of tell that Frank Beamer was at the end of his run there. I think things were catching up to him recruiting-wise in terms of recruits not wanting to go there because they don't really know what his future is going to be. So he ended up retiring after the 2014 or 2015 season. And then they bring in Fuente, and Fuente, you know, has done a pretty good job so far. I mean, 19 wins in 2 years. Get back to the 10-win mark in his first year, win the Coastal Division, go back to the ACC Championship, lose a lot of underclassmen who are really kind of record setters at Virginia Tech to the NFL draft year early. So this was sort of a rebuilding year, and they still won 9 games. So maybe a little bit of a step back this year, but I think the fact that they continue to win at a pretty good clip, even when it was supposedly a rebuilding year, is probably a good sign for this coaching staff going forward.
So I remember, first off, I enjoyed watching Fuente when he was coaching at Memphis. I thought it was a great hire for him, for Virginia Tech getting him. One of the surprising things I saw was that he kept defensive coordinator Bud Foster on. What kind of impact has that really made for the program, retaining him on staff?
Well, I think it's a big deal. I mean, that sort of helped ease this whole transition. I mean, you can look around the country, and it's not easy to follow up coaching legends. It's not usually a smooth transition. I mean, you can just look at Kansas State right now and see how poorly a transition to a pre-transition can go if the previous coach is, you know, stubbornly holding on to things, or the new coach just wants to completely tear things down. I mean, look what happened in Nebraska when they're like, nope, we're going to completely abandon the roots of Nebraska and try to go, you know, West Coast pro style. Like, it just didn't work. So I think the fact that Fuente came in, and, you know, they had sort of this secret meeting with Bud Foster before Fuente was hired, where they could just, like, meet at Memphis's, or at Fuente's home in Memphis, sort of get to know each other. You know, that was sort of the catalyst for Fuente wanting to keep Bud Foster on staff. You know, Bud had worked with Frank Beamer for 35 years. So keeping him around is really sort of keeping a part of Frank Beamer's legacy in that program. And it's not like they're keeping around some guy that just put the average defenses out there, but he has consistent top 20 defenses, top 10 defenses, year in and year out. So if you're Fuente and you come in and you don't really have to worry about one side of the ball because it's been that good for 20 straight years, that really eases the transition and, you know, quote-unquote rebuild that you have to do, because really he just kind of had to focus on the offensive side, and that's been his specialty throughout the years. So, you know, it's kind of a double effect there. I think the fact that he kept Foster was good because it kept a part of Frank Beamer's legacy around. It certainly made the transition easier, and it was just less for him to worry about in terms of, you know, bringing in his own defensive coordinator. Probably would have been Galen Scott, who's on the staff, was his defensive coordinator in Memphis. But then you're worrying about a new scheme and everything like that. It just made a lot more sense to kind of keep the continuity there with Bud.
That's good. Turning to the bowl game, kind of tell me who on offense and who on defense are kind of the leader for both sides of the ball for Virginia Tech.
Offensively, I would have said Cam Phillips, but he's hurt for the game. He has sports hernia surgery. is going to miss the final college game, which is kind of a bummer because he had such a great Virginia Tech career. In his absence, I'll go with Wyatt Keller. He's a left guard. He's sort of been a, you know, he's a talkative guy, but he's not talked to the media all year. I think he's been happy with how he's played, and he's been as a leader. He didn't kind of want to jinx that at all. But, you know, he's a very powerful blocker, and, you know, maybe not the rah-rah leader type, but I think a lot of people follow his example with kind of how he approaches the game. So I think he's a guy that sets the tone on offense. Defensively, I think there are a lot of guys to choose from. Probably Ricky Walker on the defensive line. He's a defensive tackle that, you know, quite honestly, probably got robbed of the All-ACC voting. He was an honorable mention. My ballot, I think I had his second team. I thought he was certainly worthy of something better than an honorable mention. But, you know, the coaches have described him as the bell cow of that defense. You know, he sort of is the leader of that group. What he says, everybody listens. He sort of sets the tone on everything. So if I'm going to pick somebody on that side of the ball, I'd say Ricky Walker.
You mentioned Cam Phillips just in the game. I also believe I saw that the leading rusher, was it Trayvon McMillan, announced his desire to transfer. So he obviously won't be playing in the bowl game. So it sounds like Virginia Tech will be without their leading receiver and leading rusher. I mean, obviously, that's going to be a big loss for the Hokies. Who do you see kind of filling in those roles for them?
Yeah, you know, we say leading rusher with Trayvon McMillan, but the carries have been so erratic. I mean, I think he led the team with like 470-some yards. It's not like this is a 1,000-yard rusher. He had been in the past, but something with him and this new coaching staff just never kind of clicked. You even go back to their last game, I think he had two carries or something like that. So I don't really see that as a huge loss in this game. Deshaun McClay, Stephen Peoples, the two guys who were very productive in that Virginia game. Both ran for 71 yards. Jalen Holston's a freshman who's come along. So I think they have plenty of tailback options that they can turn to. Receiver is a lot bigger question mark. I mean, Cam Phillips is not just the leading receiver this year and second or third in the ACC, whatever he finished up this year. He's Virginia Tech's all-time leading receiver in terms of yards and receptions. So you don't take somebody like that out of the offense and not be missing a major piece. They had some young receivers that had stepped up during the season. Sean Savoy was a freshman who was really second in all the receiving categories they had this year. Eric Kuma is a sophomore who's stepped up his game in the second half of the season, sort of a third down target. Then they have some really younger guys. Hezekiah Grimsley had 5 catches in the Virginia game. He had 7 catches all year, so it's not like he's done this all season. He's a true freshman. C.J. Carroll's another guy. So they have some options. It's just that you lose somebody of that sort of seniority and ability, it becomes very tough to replace that with any single one person. I don't think they can, quite honestly.
So from what you're saying, it sounds like it's going to be both running back and wide receiver kind of by committee in the bowl game.
Yeah, I mean, running back was by committee all year anyway, and then receiver kind of was too outside of Phillips. So you remove that sort of one star player that they had on offense. It's really going to have to be a group effort to make up that kind of production.
This bowl game kind of being pinned as a strength for strength. Obviously, Virginia Tech's defense, one of the best in the country, versus one of the top offense in the country in Oklahoma State. Even teams that have done a decent job slowing OSU down for a quarter or two, even Kansas State, OSU still finds ways to get their points. Virginia Tech has done a decent job, but outside of a couple of games, they haven't scored a lot. How well do you think Virginia Tech will be able to kind of keep up the offensive pace against Oklahoma State, or do you think they're able to slow them down kind of more to Virginia Tech's offensive pace?
Well, I think that's going to have to be the goal, because I don't think they can win a shootout. I kind of go back to that season opener, and obviously Virginia Tech was more at full strength back then, but they played a West Virginia team that plays a lot like Oklahoma State. I think Oklahoma State is a better version of that West Virginia team, but, you know, it's an air raid type offense. They go up-tempo, they throw the ball a lot, and West Virginia outgained Virginia Tech by about 160 yards in that game. They went up and down the field. I think they had 590 yards total, but the Hokies really controlled the time of possession. They won the field position battle by a huge margin. I mean, I don't think West Virginia started outside of its own 30-yard line at all, with inside at the 10-yard line probably four or five times. But really, the whole game plan there was to make Western Virginia go the entire length of the field. They might do it, but it's really difficult to get all the way down there and then get a touchdown at the end of the drive. So I think if there's a blueprint that the Hokies want to follow, that's probably it. Now, they had some better offensive pieces in that game. I know Cam Phillips had 100 yards. Josh Jackson, the quarterback, ran it better than he ever has. He had a 100-yard game, and that game broke off like a 60-yard run and a touchdown run in the third quarter, I think it was. So I don't know if they can quite duplicate it, but they're certainly not going to win this game if it's 45-42. I just don't see that happening with Virginia Tech. So if they can keep it in the 20s, maybe they've got a shot. It gets up to 30, it's questionable. If it's over 40, there's just no chance.
Obviously, the biggest strength for OSU is out in the offense is that receiving core depth with James Washington, Marcel Aitman, Dylan Stoner, even Tyron Johnson, who didn't get to play a lot. The list keeps going. Tell me a little bit about Virginia Tech's secondary, and do you think they can be up to the task of slowing those receivers down?
Yeah, I think they can, just because they've had a track record of being a pretty good secondary. They lost some pieces there, too, to injury. Terrell Edmonds was a big one. Free safety, was an all-ACC type guy. He's out for the year with a shoulder injury. Mook Reynolds is a whip linebacker, sort of a half row or half safety, half linebacker spot. He was dinged up at the end of the year. I don't know exactly what his status is going to be for this game, but the real strength of that secondary right now is the cornerbacks. And you've got two seniors in Greg Stroman and Brandon Faison that are pretty battle-tested. Stroman was the first-team All-ACC pick. Faison's been a three-and-a-half-year starter, battled some injuries early in his career, but he's been a real solid guy over his career. Then you've got Adonis Alexander. He's a 6'3", 200-pound guy. They really like his physicality. He's been a little erratic with some off-field stuff, got a suspension earlier this year. But he's a very, very capable corner as well. They have those three guys that they can rotate in there, as well as a nickelback, that don't really shy away from playing in one-on-one coverage or, you know, have to rely on help defense or anything like that. I mean, they come to Virginia Tech to play in that kind of defense and have those opportunities. So the fact that they're going up against a pretty good passing defense, I don't think they're necessarily nervous about that as much as they're eager about the opportunity because, you know, they call themselves DBU. I don't know if you know, there's plenty of other schools, Florida, LSU among them, that could probably have better claims to that. But Virginia Tech is going to try to claim it too, and I'm sure they're going to try to back that up in this game and prove that they're worthy of that.
Will you be going to the game?
I will.
Excellent, excellent. Cool. Enjoy yourself. I will be watching from home. I don't know if you can tell us or if you have said it from the paper. Do you have a prediction for the game?
Yeah, I'm still trying to kind of figure it out. I just don't know where they're going to come with enough offense, Virginia Tech, that is, to keep up with this. I feel like even if they could keep Oklahoma State in check a little bit, are they going to have the offensive firepower to take advantage of that? So, you know, if I'm picking, I'm saying something like 34-21 or something like that. I still haven't exactly figured out the score. I just think it's going to be very, very tough for the Hokies to win this game.
So my favorite question to always ask in these interviews is, if Virginia Tech does get the win, what did they do successfully to do so?
You know, I think it's they stayed off the field defensively, which means doing really well on third downs, not allowing Oklahoma State to have these sort of prolonged drives. Obviously, they can't give up the big plays defensively. That's sort of been a tough spot for this defense. They have given up quite a few long plays. And that's sort of where Oklahoma State could kill you is, you know, if you make him go 13 plays down the field, that's a lot more work than one play for 70 yards and a touchdown. So they're going to have to limit those plays, get off the field on third downs, and then they're probably going to have to run the ball pretty well, which is something they haven't done great all season, did a little bit better in the Virginia game, the regular season finale. But, you know, if they could run for 200 yards or something like that and control the clock, I think that all plays into the sort of game plan they need to win this game.
All right. Well, enjoy the game and enjoy Orlando. And Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you, Andy.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining me.